On my way up there to New York, me and this guy, Mickey Mayfield, were driving in my Volkswagen up there, and we stopped in Roanoke, and while we were there, she took us over and introduced us to this old banjo, some Appalachian banjo player named Josh Thomas, played banjo with a steel bottleneck in Virginia, in Roanoke, Virginia. He sang coal mining songs, coal mining and dirt farming songs. And he didn't have any teeth, and he was blind. And he was about up in his 70s. And everything he played and sang was what he had been passed on to him. None of it was written down. And Cliff was into the music people, talking and interviewing music people and everything, and that was his real love and everything. And so I said, Cliff, come on, we're going to go back on our way to Georgia. We're going to go through Virginia, and I want to introduce you to somebody that I think we probably ought to talk to. He had his little tape recorder, and I had my camera. Something told me that this is somebody that we need to stop and see and touch base with and talk to, and it was really important. As it turned out, all my life there's always been things where I couldn't figure out why I did it. I just did it and knew it had to be done. Well, turns out, within about 6 months after we had stopped in to see Josh, and we recorded him singing several songs, Cliff filled up a 5-inch tape, both sides, 5-inch reel to reel, quarter inch reel to reel, interviewing, and Josh would stop and talk, and then he'd start playing, talk and stuff, and I was taking pictures. I was going all over his cabin and him, taking pictures of him playing and where he did and all that stuff. And that was the end of that. And that kept me and Clifford kind of connected for the next several years. And then I found Cliff when I was in Austin, years after I started doing the work I'm doing now. I was in Texas and I had to go to Austin, and I looked up Cliff, and he said, come on over, we'll have some burritos, some beer, and whatever. I'm going to pull out some old Josh Thomas tapes. I want you to hear them, because I'd never heard them. And I said, oh yeah, great. So I put them on, and he had had it transferred to quarter-inch cassette and cleaned them up a little bit. And we sat there and listened to Josh Thomas, and we hadn't heard him. And this was like that was in 70, it was 80, 90, it was 22 years later. We were sitting there listening to this guy, Josh. Well, come to find out, about 6 months after we recorded him, he passed away in the fall of that spring. That was springtime, or April. And when you see these pictures, they were color slides, and it was when I was taking. The dogwoods were in bloom, and the azaleas were in bloom, and it was absolutely gorgeous, all bright, new spring green and everything. And the point of this story is that this material sat and sat and sat, and I had the pictures, he had the tapes, and we talked about Josh, and it was a big deal for us. And suddenly, I got a phone call from Mike Seeger back in about 1997, about 10 years ago. He had tracked Cliff down. Cliff was at a seminar. Mike Seeger would call these shows he does. He calls them town shows, or he calls them house shows. He calls them house shows. He doesn't call them concerts. He goes to do a house show, little intimate stage or something like that. And he would talk about his banjos. You know, he's got an incredible collection of banjos and instruments and all kinds of things like that. And Cliff Enders was in the audience one night when Mike was doing a town show, and he said, and Mike was, he's the quintessential historian of Appalachian banjo music.
He's a banjo music.
He's he's got it all. And Cliff Enders was in the audience, raised his hand, said, have you ever run across anybody that would play the steel bottleneck banjo? Mike said, well, I have not, run across them or seen them, but I've heard of them. What do you know about that? Well, they started talking, and Clifford said, well, there was some time ago, me and this buddy of mine went through there, and we met this guy, Josh Thomas, and I think Mike Seeger had heard of Josh Thomas, but didn't know where he was, didn't know anything about him, and of course, by this time, he was long gone.
Yeah.
And Mike said, I'd like to hear some of that, if you could. Well, Cliff made a duke of the tape, sent it to Mike. And then Mike has been, he does these things with the folkways at the Smithsonian. And he was putting together a collection of Appalachian banjo music, different kinds. I mean, there was all different kinds, different regions, different places, different hollers.
Yeah.
Had different kinds of banjo music. It wasn't all just banjo music. There was different banjos, and there was different kinds of banjo music in the different everywhere. And so this Josh Thomas, he got real interested in it, and he took the tapes from Cliff and called. Cliff had told him that I had documented this guy, taking pictures of him and everything. He called me and said, I'm doing this project for Folkways and doing a collection of this, and I've got a couple of cuts on there from Josh Thomas and him talking and singing and everything.
That's
like some pictures. And of course, I'd gotten an email from Cliff saying that he had given him this information, hopes he doesn't mind, he's gonna track me down. And I said, well, yeah, sure. And so Josh Thomas, 25 years later, well, now it's going on 30 years later, he's finally winding up in the Smithsonian Institution on a Folkways collection because me and Cliff stopped in there
in Roanoke. That's
on
great.
The way to Georgia,
that's
going through Roanoke,
story.
And said, we got to stop and see this guy. And
God's told you.
That's great.
You know, and I thought, man, you know, that was really cool.
Yeah.
We could have been so easy to just pass that by those people. And since then, I've talked to Mike a couple of times about his research with it, and he wanted me to send a whole set of those pictures I had. I said, well, I don't mind. He says, I can pay you, and I can see to it that you get a cut up. And I said, listen, I'm not one bit interested in getting paid for this material.
Having credit with
all
you
I
guys.
Want is, I want, I just want to be credited properly, and I want you to be the only person that does anything with this stuff, and I have never, ever released any of these pictures. I'm the only one that has any of these pictures, and I'll be happy to send you a proof set of what I did. That's what I did. I created a proof set of in black and white so that he could scan it and look at it, and then let me know which ones he wanted to use.
Right.
And I said, if we can have that understanding, and I can trust you on that, then you can. Then I'm okay with that. I don't care about getting any money for it. And he called me back and said, well, I really would like to see all those pictures in color. And he talked about how they were trying. He was working with a C.C. Conway, who's an English major at Western. In Boone, North Carolina, at Appalachian State, who was also a music historian, anthropologist. They were working together on this. He said, well, I don't know. We don't know which pictures we want to use or whatever. So I said, well, okay, I'll send you a set of them. Next time I was talking to him, he said, you know, I knew that I only wanted to use a couple of these pictures that I really wanted to use, but I needed to see them all to see if I have his banjo.
Ah! Interesting.
And,
they were trying to document the instrument.
Yeah, because there was no... He had this, and he did.
He did.
He says, I think I've got Josh Thomas's banjo. Okay.
Yeah, because those people go fiendishly that collect.
Well, he matched up. There was no name on this on the stem.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there was a certain way, a certain wear,
you can pattern
wear,
the wear in scratching,
the,
yes.
in the face of the banjo.
Yeah.
And then also the marks that steel bottleneck would leave.
How wild.
Who plays a steel bottleneck? I mean, besides nowadays, there probably are several that do it, but back
it
in that day, I mean, this guy was 80 years old. This was 1970, so back in the late 1900s is when he started playing. Pretty unusual. So anyway, from the pictures, he figured out that he was in an old it wound up in a some store up there in Virginia somewhere. And he's such a collector that I think all the dealers and all would contact him when they'd find something special. And he went,
what a saint.
He's pretty sure it's in his. He got on Josh's banjo, and so Josh is
going. Fame lives on to some degree.
Yeah, and he'll now be in the Smithsonian.
What a crazy tale.
It was a wild tale.
Probably have some relatives someday run across that and find out that they're descended from him.
Mike did some more of that genealogy on Josh. And there was an old woman housekeeper that knew of him and talked about his last few days, where she'd go over. And this guy, all he ate was potatoes. He would cook. He heated with a wood stove in this shack in Virginia, in the mountains. And he would put potatoes up on top of the wood stove and turn them. And that's what he would eat.
Because that's you can eat.
And not tell what you can eat, but he knew what a potato was.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And people would bring him stuff, but he couldn't. Yeah, if it was up to him, he'd have to eat these potatoes.
Yeah.
And he'd just warm them on the stove and turn them, and that would be
They were
it.
Soft enough. Yeah.
If nobody brought him anything, that's what he'd eat.
That's wild.
Yeah.